All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. All those who have business before the court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Morning. With me this morning are Judges Meredith and Falvey. This is the matter of Buffington. Will counsel note their appearances for the record, and will counsel for the appellant tell the court if you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Stacy Trumbull with the National Veterans Legal Services Program, representing Mr. Thomas Buffington, and with me at counsel's table is Amy Leonard, also with the National Veterans Legal Services Program. We would like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal. Please.
Thanks very much. For the government.
My name is Deborah Bernal, and I'm representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and with me is Joan Moriarty, Deputy Chief Counsel.
Thanks very much. All right, proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The issue before the court today is whether the court should strike down Regulation 38 CFR Section 3.654B2, the regulation barring Mr. Buffington's receipt of his earned disability payments for his chronic disability when he was not receiving VA compensation or active duty pay, because that regulation violates the statutes that command that the Secretary will pay disability benefits. Specifically, the controlling statutes make plain that Congress did not intend what the challenge regulation provides here, that a veteran forfeits earned service-connected disability payments after release from active duty if the veteran does not file what amounts to a second claim for benefits or what the Secretary calls a claim for recommencement within a year following discharge. Under Chevron, if Congress has directly spoken to the precise question at issue here, and the intent of Congress is clear, as it is in this case, the court and the Secretary must give effect to that clear congressional intent. Our starting point here is Section 1110 that mandates that the United States will pay a veteran for disabilities resulting from active duty service. Under 1110, the VA has absolutely no discretion to pay disability compensation unless there is an exception to that command in another part of Title 38. Thus, contrary to the government's argument, there is no gap for the VA to fill. To be sure, Congress has legislated specific exceptions to its command to pay veterans under 1110, and one such exception is 5304C, which prohibits a veteran from receiving both active duty service pay and VA compensation pay simultaneously. For any period in which the veteran receives active duty pay, they cannot receive VA compensation pay. Thus, a service-connected veteran like Mr. Buffington is entitled to VA payments under Section 1110 the day following release from his active duty service, because neither 5304C nor any other statute in Title 38 provides an exception to 1110's command to pay a veteran for their disabilities. Payment is mandatory, it is not discretionary. Congress left absolutely no gap. A service-connected veteran is entitled to his or her compensation pay when not on active duty, period.
So what's the problem? What's your answer to the government's argument?
Well, the Secretary argues that 501 allows them and gives them the statutory authority to operate the forfeiture that's currently being perpetrated on.
What allows them?
The Secretary argues Section 501. So our argument is 1110 requires that the VA pay the benefit, unless there's an exception. 5304C is an exception. You can't get simultaneous payments. The secretary will argue that Section 501 gives him authority to create what he calls procedural structure to prevent the duplication of benefits, and describes the regulation as setting forth a procedure by which the VA prevents such duplication of payments. But there's a couple problems with the 501 argument. The first is that 3.654B2 does absolutely nothing to prevent the duplication of benefits, because by its own terms, it only applies after a veteran is separated from service. In other words, the prohibition or the concern here against duplicative payments doesn't exist when 3.654B2 kicks in. Second, the regulation imposes a substantive limitation on entitlement to payments that contravenes the mandate in 1110 that the United States will pay disability benefits to a veteran who has been disabled in service. Section 501 does not authorize the secretary to create his own substantive exceptions to 1110 for service-connected disabilities, because 501 states very specifically by its own terms that if the secretary is going to promulgate regulations under 501, those regulations must be consistent with those laws and, quote, be necessary and appropriate, end quote, to carry out those laws. Here, we would say that 3.654B2 is inconsistent with 1110, and it is not necessary to carry out the laws because the regulation does nothing to prevent the duplication of benefits. It's important, I think, to understand that, of course, we look to the plain meaning of the statutes at issue, but we also look at the statutory scheme and the context in which such laws are promulgated. And so when we look at Title 38 generally and in Chapter 53, where we see 5304C, we see that Congress knew exactly how to terminate benefits, to allow a veteran to renounce benefits, to provide for circumstances under which a second claim needed to be filed to regain entitlement to benefits. And we don't see that in this context, where a veteran was already awarded benefits. He was already awarded his 10% for his chronic disability. He was he went into service. He served his country once and then entered service multiple times after that. The VA appropriately stopped his payments under 5304C. But what they inappropriately did was keep those payments when he was not on active duty. And so we would say that, moreover, to the extent that you find any ambiguity in any of your statutory analysis, we would ask that you resolve any such ambiguity in Mr. Buffington's favor in light of the Veterans Canon. In summary, there is no statute that authorizes the forfeiture that the secretary has exacted through 3.654B2. And because 501 does not permit the secretary to impose such limitations on entitlement to pay, and because any such constriction is in violation of the clear mandate of 1110 that the United States will pay, we ask that the regulation be struck as contrary to law.
Thank you.
Can I ask you a couple questions about the alternative arguments that you made in your briefs about equitable tolling and due process? Both of those arguments turn in part on the 2003 notice that VA provided to the veteran, and you called the notice misleading in your briefs. Are you suggesting that there was anything in the notice letter itself that was inaccurate or that was affirmatively misleading, or is it solely the absence of information that you're contending is misleading?
We would argue, Judge Meredith, that in fact it is affirmatively misleading, because they told him, when you got off active duty service, give us your DD-214s and we will reinstate your benefits. Importantly, the word reinstate means to restore. So there's absolutely every indication in that statement that if his DD-214s were submitted, a reasonable person would believe that once that was done, he would receive his payments. Now, a reasonable person would believe that he would not actually be remitted payments until he submitted as DD-214s. But a reasonable person would not think that a failure to do so in a particular time frame would operate a forfeiture as we see here.
But essentially, it's the omission of information from the letter that is, in your view, problematic. Let me rephrase. Are you contending that VA had any obligation to put that information in the letter to notify the veteran of the one-year provision?
Absolutely, especially if they're going to operate and if they're going to use that against the
veteran. Under what authority? What's the authority for saying they had an obligation to notify?
Well, I think it's more of an obligation to make sure that if you're going to tell a veteran they need, this letter was addressed directly to Mr. Buffington. It said, you need to do this. You need to submit your DD-214. It didn't tell him any other information. So it still affirmatively misled him in the sense that he was told he needed to do A, and if he did A, he would get his benefits reinstated. So the authority is the letter itself.
So the Secretary, as you know, argued in their briefs that under Morris, the veteran should be presumed to have known about the one-year requirement or provision. In response, you basically said Morris doesn't apply because he was misled, but that's partly because of the omission of this one-year provision in the notice letter. Now, is essentially a circular argument that he shouldn't be presumed to know about the one-year provision because VA didn't tell him about it? Why isn't Morris controlling here?
Well, I would say Morris isn't controlling because I read NOAA to say if the veteran was misled, then Morris doesn't apply. Here, the veteran was misled.
But in NOAA, they gave him bad information. It was incorrect what the veteran was told.
Well, the veteran in that case, I believe, was told that he had a certain time to submit, a particular amount of days that he was required to file, I think, a medical information. So, Your Honor, that is absolutely true. But what I would say in response is that they have said that if you do this, then we will do the following. So there's no, that affirmatively states that there isn't a deadline. Is what I would say. You could certainly look at it as if it was an omission, but I would say they told him if you did this, then you will not get, you know, we will not pay you until you submit that form. You submit the DD-214.
Where does the 1 year come from?
The 1 year requirement comes from 3.654B2.
It's a regulation. It's not in the statute, is it?
No, Your Honor, and I think that's exactly.
So why isn't that enough? Your argument is the statute is plain. The government has no authority to put limitations on it. So a fortiori, it shouldn't be putting one-year limits.
Well, Your Honor, what I would say.
Unless I misunderstood your argument.
No, the argument, our primary argument is that the statutes at issue here and the statutory context is very clear. But we have alternative arguments that we make as well. And one of those is the due process concern, which is also a pretty significant.
Well, what's the importance of 1 year? Is there any, I guess we'll hear from the government, but where does the 1 year come from? Why 1 year, not 18 months, 30 days? What's the reasonable, fundamental fairness of 1 year?
Well, Your Honor, we would say it is fundamentally unfair, and that's because the entire 3.654B2 is outside of what Congress has provided. So essentially what the Secretary has done is disguise this, what they say now is a procedural regulation, as a substantive forfeiture based on a particular time period. In other words, it is when something is submitted.
Well, what about the duty to assist? Shouldn't the Secretary in this letter have said, look, we have our own, which we consider reasonable, one-year time period for you to send us whatever it is you're going to send us. How can we help you put your paperwork together so that you're not forfeiting or giving up your benefit to which you may think you're entitled?
That's a good point, Your Honor, but I
don't think it's raised here.
No,
in the case, but that's the way I see at least one aspect. Duty to assist. Veterans are in a different category than any other citizen when it comes to Congress.
And certainly they have a very special place in our laws. I would say that I think your point underscores the importance in particular of the notice in this regard.
Right.
The burden on the secretary would be quite small. And, you know, clearly we have a significant forfeiture of payments, which we argue under 1110 there must be paid because there's no statutory exception. So the due process infringement that we see here is significant.
But those are alternative arguments.
Yes.
You're content with either way we go.
No, Your Honor, I would counsel and ask for the court to address our Chevron step one argument, that fundamentally here we have a baseline.
Well, what about the Staub case where we were confronted with a regulation put out by the secretary which conflicted entirely with the statute? We just said regulation must fall, statute prevails, pay them.
Well, what we are asking the court, the remedy that we are asking the court is that the regulation be struck as contrary to law, because 1110 says you will pay. We have a carve out in 5304C, which says you can't get both, and we're in complete agreement on that. You cannot double dip.
There's no conflict there. Both are statutes.
Absolutely.
Right.
What's in conflict is the regulation that provides this process. Well, the secretary will say it's a process, but it's essentially a forfeiture of benefits because of when a veteran submits paperwork. And I think it's important, particularly important here, to note that we have a situation in the context of 3.654B that the veteran has already been adjudicated as having been service connected and having received a rating. So this isn't a situation where there's some issue about entitlement to the benefit. He's already service connected. Essentially what the secretary's regulation allows to happen is essentially the veteran has to put in a second claim, this claim for recommencement, which has no foundation in statute.
Anybody else? Joe?
So, Your Honors.
I think we may have another question or two. Just give us a minute.
Yes.
Why is this not looked at as that the benefits have been waived for the period of time that they're on active duty, and that the veteran is obligated to notify the VA at the end of that active duty to lift the waiver?
Well, Your Honor, we would have no quarrel, and we have no quarrel with the VA requiring the veteran to let them know. Although I believe there's other mechanisms whereby the VA can ascertain that information. But we have no quarrel with the fact that the VA can require the veteran to let them know. And we also have no quarrel with the fact that the VA wouldn't have to necessarily pay the veteran until the veteran lets them know. But I would say that the waiver here, for example, there was a waiver that was submitted in August of 2003. And that waiver form, by its own terms, limits the waiver for when a veteran is receiving both active duty pay, or potentially capable of receiving active duty pay and capable of receiving compensation. So the waiver says it is a waiver to receive military pay and allowances. And the veteran in this form, and it's at our record 1233, the veteran elected to receive pay and allowances in lieu of VA benefits. So we would argue that the waiver is very specific and it's for a particular purpose. Thus, when he or she is not on active duty, the waiver would expire.
Well, it says that it also says, doesn't it, that it will remain until or unless you notify VA otherwise in writing. It'll remain in effect until then. And the VA regulation lets it backdate for a year. So it seems the VA regulation actually benefits the veteran over the acknowledgement that the veteran began the process with.
Yes, Judge Falvey, I would read, I think the words that you're referring to is under waiver procedure that says this waiver will remain in effect until you are entitled, while you are entitled to receive VA disability payments unless you notify VA otherwise in writing. The waiver, the withholding of the money will remain in effect. But it says nothing.
It's not a withholding. When you waive entitlement to something, you're declining it, right?
Yes, yeah, that is a better word, Your Honor. So he's declined to receive VA compensation while he is on active duty. So while I think the VA could ask him to submit the DD-214s, the waiver that's in effect is just the waiver of while he's on active duty. So we, what happens is we go immediately back, and that's under 5304C, and this form actually refers to 5304C for the duplication of benefits. But once a veteran is off active duty, we must revert to 1110, which says we shall pay. So we don't actually have to remit the payment, perhaps, until the veteran tells us. But this can't be a continuing waiver because there's no authority to make any continuing waiver. If we're defining waiver as, the ability to actually keep the money or never to get it back. Now, you had mentioned that, the regulation gives the veteran a year back. Under the regulation, that's right. So when the veteran actually submits the, it lets the VA know that they're back, the regulation would allow the veteran to be paid up to 1 year prior to that. But what we forget about in that context is that what we're not saying out loud is that it also allows them to keep all of the money after the veteran was released from active duty pay up to the point 1 year before they tell them.
Let me ask you, if I could, about the supplemental material that you submitted. At least some of those cases seem to involve veterans who may have negligently or inadvertently or maybe even intentionally not told the VA that they were receiving active duty pay or drill pay. And then at some point later, the VA learned of it and then recouped only an equal value to the amount of active duty pay that they received, in essence, allowing them to receive their benefits for the entire period other than those days that they were compensated for active service. Here, Mr. Buffington seems to have done things right, other than forgetting to submit the DD-214. So does that strike you as a bit ironic that Mr. Buffington has a gap in benefits where some of these veterans who may have been gaming the system some received only a offset for those actual days?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or am I reading those wrong?
No, I think you're reading those correct, Judge Falvey. And when you look at those, it does, I think, evidence the arbitrary and capriciousness of the Secretary's use of the regulation in this instance. Because as you describe, you have a situation, though all those board decisions dealt with overpayments. So the veteran was both on active duty and receiving VA compensation at the same time.
Because they didn't notify.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So we have a situation where they were actually infringing on 5304C. The VA finds out about it years later, and then they go and recoup the exact amount of the overpayment. So it's very ironic that someone who does tell, and fundamentally unfair, I would say, it goes to arbitrariness, why it is that Mr. Buffington tells the VA he's going back on active duty, sort of does all the right things. Serving his country multiple times, very busy doing that, and then we have a situation where he is penalized. It's essentially a penalty, really, that they're exacting for someone who did the right thing and told the VA versus the board decisions where we see several such instances where, for whatever reason, VA did not know, the veteran didn't inform them, and they're being treated much better.
So help me here. If I don't, how do I resolve it in favor of Mr. Buffington if I don't buy your statutory Chevron Step 1 argument? Or your equitable tolling argument, am I stuck with due process violation, arbitrary and capricious, what?
Certainly that's an option for the court, Your Honor, but we would say that we would ask that you rule on Chevron Step 1 in our favor, but if you cannot do that, we would ask that, you know, certainly we think we have a good argument on Step 2, but we did not argue that in our briefs. So
answer the judge's question.
Yes, Your Honor. So the issue there is if the plain meaning, if there's any ambiguity at Step 1, then you need to look to whether or not the statute is consistent, or I'm sorry, the regulation is consistent with the laws. In effect here, and we've said that it is indeed not, importantly, because there's no such, the regulation doesn't even deal with duplication of benefits. So that's number one. Number two is it's arbitrary and capricious, and I think we need to look no further than those board decisions that we submitted.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. We understand your argument.
Thank you very much.
And you'll be back for your rebuttal, if any.
Yes,
sir. Thank you very much. Counsel, when you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Deborah Bernal again. I'm representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and I'm joined by Deputy Chief Counsel Joan Moriarty. Congress has granted the Secretary broad authority to prescribe all rules and regulations necessary to carry out the laws administered by the Department. 38 CFR 3.654 is consistent with this rulemaking authority and creates a mechanism by which VA manages compensation benefits when a veteran returns to active service and provides the procedural structure for recommencement of benefits upon release. The regulation puts the responsibility on the veteran to notify VA when they've been released from active duty so that benefits can be reinstated. The Secretary's position is that this is a reasonable exercise of a statutory authority under 501A. And it's not only the type of procedure that is limited to VA. For example, if a Social Security retiree reaches full retirement age and has 100% vested interest to their Social Security retirement benefits, they've earned them, they've paid into that system their entire life. If they do not file a claim for benefits and wait 4.5 years to do so, like Mr. Buffington did, the Social Security Administration doesn't track that person down and award them a lump sum payment back to the date they first established 100% entitlement. They forfeit all benefits except for 6 months. VA, because this is—
Wait a minute, is that pursuant to a statute?
That is pursuant to a statute.
We've got a regulation we're talking about here.
But, Your Honor, the VA regulation operates in a veteran-friendly manner to provide an entire year grace period for the veteran to file a claim or otherwise notify VA after release from active duty. And then benefits will recommence the date following release. And if they don't do that, like Mr. Buffington did not in this case, we still provide the benefits, reinstate the benefits retroactively an entire year prior to the date he filed his claim.
So he suffered no monetary damages, the argument you're making?
No, Your Honor. He did suffer monetary damage, but—
How much? Do you know?
Approximately between around $3,500.
Total?
I believe so, yes.
That's what we're arguing about here?
That's right. Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't you pay him?
Your Honor, the parties had discussed settling the case and negotiations were not successful.
No, I understood that. I'm not being facetious. Why doesn't the government pay him instead of insisting on this? By the way, where does this 1 year come from? What's reasonable about that?
The 1 year, Your Honor, the 1 year requirement comes from the authority that Congress delegated to the Secretary to administer the compensation.
No, no, but the Secretary's got to be fair, doesn't he?
He does, and the Secretary's.
So how did he conclude that, or whatever Secretary, how did they conclude that 1 year was the appropriate time as opposed to 18 months or 5 years or whenever?
Your Honor, the Secretary in 1962 instituted the 1 year same period. And I don't know why it was 1 year as opposed to 18 months or 2 years, but the 1 year time frame is used repeatedly in Title 38. And so the Secretary's position is that it's a reasonable time frame.
In other words, because whoever the Secretary was in 1962, long before there even was a court or judicial review of any actions of the Secretary, decided on 1 year. And you're not able, not that I expect you to, but is there anything that suggests why 1 year was picked as opposed to anything else? We're now in 2019. Maybe a shorter time period is appropriate, or longer. We now have a different system than we had in 1962.
Yes,
reservists are called up regularly back to active duty, veterans, back to active duty over and over again.
Yes, Your Honor, but the...
So what's so magical about 1 year?
Your Honor, there's nothing magical about 1 year, but what's the significant point is that the responsibility lies with the veteran, not VA, to notify the agency that they've been released from active duty.
He did.
Yes, Your Honor, he did 4.5 years after.
So what?
So the agency, the Secretary has determined that it is within his reasonable authority to create this, to have this administrative regulation operate so that veterans, compensation benefits can be managed for millions of veterans to allow, to provide this 1 year period, grace period really, to file a claim following release that would backdate the benefits to the date.
Well, is there any question that he's entitled to the $3,500 apart from the fact that he didn't ask for it within the 1 year period?
Well, Your Honor.
Suppose he had complied with the regulation, you'd pay him the money.
We would likely have paid him the money, but the way the regulation operates is that the benefits are terminated when the benefit payments are terminated and his rating is no longer exists. So because he is not allowed to receive the military pay and the VA pay, the
compensation. But that's pursuant to statute.
Yes. But when he comes back, it's inherent for VA to reevaluate him by reviewing his service medical records and determine whether the disability is consistent and re-rate the disability based on the current degree of severity. Here, he's rated 10% for tinnitus, but he also was non-compensable for a back disability and a left lower lip scar. So, in theory, those disabilities, the non-compensable disabilities could have worsened, and he would have, upon reevaluation, his service-connected rating may have changed. So, the Secretary's regulation provides for reevaluation upon release from...
So on the one hand, he comes back from his subsequent tour of combat duty or active duty, whatever it was, and he may have gotten a new condition or his existing service-connected condition may have been aggravated or gotten worse, and you would have paid him more if he had been rated at a higher rating. That's your argument.
If he would have...
But here, ironically, he's gotten paid less.
Your Honor, the regulation...
How do you square those two concepts?
Your Honor...
He's not asking for an increase. He's just saying, pay me what I was owed if I had filed within 1 year.
Your Honor, the Secretary's position is that he has been paid what he's owed. He was been paid 1 year prior to the date he filed his claim. And by operation of 3.654B2, he's entitled to no more than that. If he would have filed his claim within 1 year of release, that would be a different set of circumstances, and he would have been entitled to reinstatement effective the day following his release from active duty. But he did not do that.
So we have a choice here. We can say that the Secretary acted A, consistently with congressional intent in adopting the regulation. B, the regulation was properly applied. And C, the regulation is, as a matter of fundamental fairness, okay. Is that a fair summary of your position?
Yes, Your Honor. And the regulation has, just to note, the Congress enacted 5304B in 1958, but the VA regulation 3.654 has existed in some form in the VA Code of Regulations since 1936. VA has, since inception, had to manage the flow of benefits for veterans going on active duty and coming off and receiving compensation pay. So VA was doing this long before Congress stepped in and said veterans cannot receive duplicative benefits.
Well, does the phrase the VA sitting off in splendid isolation because there was no judicial review ring a bell? I think it was the Supreme Court in Brown against Gardner where that first appeared. So just because you've done it all since 1936 doesn't necessarily make it correct, does it?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. But what I was trying to get at was that the VA has managed the compensation for veterans and must have a procedural structure in place to manage that for the millions of veterans who have served since this regulation was enacted.
All right, so are you arguing that this would be an unreasonable burden on the VA and the Treasury to allow a veteran to claim what you concede he's entitled to, but doesn't make the claim within 1 year? Is that it? It's a burden on the VA to handle this?
No, Your Honor. It's the argument is not that it's too burdensome for VA to administer. It's that the Secretary, pursuant to his reasonable regulatory authority under 501A, gets to decide who has the burden to file the claim. And here, the Secretary, since 1962, has determined that the responsibility for notifying the agency when you are released from active duty lies with the veteran. And if the veteran doesn't do that, then they cannot receive reinstatement of benefits until 1 year prior to the date that they do so. Here, Mr. Buffington waited 4.5 years before he notified VA that he'd been released from active duty.
Suppose he was in a coma for 4.5 years. Suppose he had PTSD that made him disabled or disoriented from these particular activities, but not others. I can think of 1,000 examples where it might have taken him 4.5 or 30 years.
Well, Your Honor,
why is there any self-imposed statute of limitations in the form of a regulation put out by the Secretary that puts the burden on the veteran to tell you it's time for me to be paid what you acknowledge he's owed?
Your Honor, because they're his benefits that he would like to reclaim, and the agency has to administer these benefits for millions of veterans and has determined that it's reasonable for him, for the veteran, to notify VA. That VA is not going to keep track of veterans while on active service, because active service can be for extended periods of time, long, lengthy periods of time, and upon release, it's the veteran's duty, veteran's responsibility to notify the agency.
Does the VA have access to that information when reservists go to and from active duty?
Your Honor, in 2009, when Mr. Buffington filed his claim, and in 2005 when he was released, VA did not have that information. Starting in 2015, VA and the Department of Defense do exchange information electronically to provide that. So the agency is aware electronically from 2015 forward.
So somebody today who's in Mr. Buffington's position wouldn't have this problem because of this sharing of information?
Your Honor, it likely would not happen again. However, the regulation still puts the duty on the veteran to notify the agency.
Is the Secretary changing the regulation?
There's no plans at this point to change the regulation.
Why not?
Well, Your Honor, if anything...
With all due respect, the Secretary is a fiduciary, isn't he?
Well, Your Honor...
Certain rights guaranteed by or conferred by Congress.
Your Honor, if the Secretary were to change the regulation in future, it wouldn't help Mr. Buffington. So I really don't know whether this... I am not aware of any steps the Secretary is taking to change this regulation, but even if it were changed tomorrow, it wouldn't change anything for Mr. Buffington, because there was no electronic exchange of information in 2009 when he filed his claim. And at the time of his release in 2005, 3.654B2 was the controlling regulation. Well, it still, of course, is a controlling regulation, but at that time, there was no other means for the agency to be made aware of his release from active duty but for him telling us.
So here, you send a notice to the veteran. There's no question that it didn't include information or guidance saying, in order to maximize your benefits, you should tell us within 1 year of when you leave active duty. That information wasn't provided to him. Is there a reason not to include that in the notice letters to the veterans? Is there any kind of burden that there would be on VA, so veterans on notice that if I want to maximize, I need to do this quickly?
No, Your Honor. The letter would have been clearer if it had included a statement telling him, referencing the one-year claim period. However,
why wasn't it there? Why wasn't what Judge Meredith asked, why wasn't that phrase or similar wording there?
Well,
why don't you put the veteran on notice? Hurry up.
The phrasing that was used was that he should submit his DD-214s when he was released from active duty. The word when would mean, our position is that means reasonable.
That day.
Well, we give him an entire year grace period, Your Honor. It doesn't have to be that day. It can be an entire year following his release.
Why? If it's so important for the government to know, and you're focused on the word when, that's the day. Why give them an extra year as opposed to an extra 4 years or 5 years or an indefinite period if we're not arguing, as we're not, over the correctness of his application for reinstatement of his benefit?
Well, Your Honor, because the Secretary promulgated a regulation saying that there was that giving the veteran this 1 year grace period, which we think is reasonable.
I understand.
Is this like when a veteran leaves active duty initially and submits their initial claim for disability, injury occurs in service, they had it the day they were discharged, both the injury and the disability, clear nexus and all that. They apply for it within that first year after active duty, and the date of benefits is backdated to the date they left active duty. Is it like that?
It is, Your Honor, because VA, the way VA administers a return to active duty is that the benefits are terminated. The service connection remains in place, but the compensation payments are terminated. So a re-adjudication and re-evaluation is required or needed upon release to ascertain the current level of disability and rate based on the current degree of disability.
So if the same reason we give them a year after active duty, then we'll backdate your benefits to that date. It won't be the date of your claim. It'll be the date you left active duty instead.
Yes, Your
Honor. That reasonable period is the same like this reasonable period.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Let me ask you about those supplemental, the board decisions.
Yes.
Why, if Mr. Buffington had not told the VA about his active service, it looks like the VA would have then just gone and recouped the duplicative payments, and he would have had continuous benefits throughout. And so it looks like Mr. Buffington, because he tried to do what he was supposed to do, but didn't give a timely enough notice of his return to civilian life, he's punished. Am I seeing this wrong? Are these distinguishable?
They are, Your Honor. There was, I believe, six supplemental board decisions, and I have 2 points about those. Exhibits B through F as you noted when you were speaking with my opposing counsel, address drill pay. And if you look at 3.654, training duty is addressed under subsection C, whereas active duty, like what Mr. Buffington was on, is addressed under subsection B2. VA has treated training duty and active duty differently since 1949. A claim is not required to recommence benefits when a veteran is on active duty training or inactive duty training. The procedure for training duty is that a veteran fills out a waiver, prospectively waiving those benefits, which are usually typically 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year. The veteran prospectively waives those benefits prior to going on active duty, and by operation of 3.654C, the benefits resume immediately when the active duty training or inactive duty training is complete. The only board decision in that supplemental authorities that actually is...
So before you go to the other board decision, how is it that the VA needed to recoup those benefits or recoup the paid benefits to offset for the active duty for training?
Because, Your Honor, pursuant to the statute, the VA statute, which is 5304, and the Department of Defense statute, which is 10 U.S.C. 12316, the veteran is not entitled to receive the comp payments and the active military pay and the military pay at the same time. They can't receive both.
No, I don't mean how is it that they, what's their authority to recoup it? I meant how is it that they needed to recoup it rather than not pay it initially?
Well, in those...
I think in my question, I said something, it looks like they had done something wrong, like something fraudulent. So it's not anything fraudulent here. It's that the system runs after the fact?
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't go so far as to call it fraudulent, but the veterans in those cases did not advise VA that they were receiving military pay, and they're not allowed to receive both, and they did. So VA recouped the military pay. I'm sorry, VA recouped the compensation benefits that they double dipped to receive. But by operation of 3.654 subsection C, training duty does not require a new claim to receive benefits.
So how about the other one then?
Decision A that was submitted was the only decision that invoked subsection B2. And that veteran, again, did not advise the agency that she was being recalled to active duty. And she was recalled to active duty for a significant period of time that resulted in double payment, overpayment of VA benefits of $8,000. So an overpayment was created, and that board decision determined it was proper, and they're recouping it against her. So she may be in a better financial position than Mr. Buffington because that veteran only lost her VA compensation benefits during the period of active duty, but VA cannot base its policy on veterans defrauding or lying to the federal government or not informing the federal government that they're going on active duty. Mr. Buffington did do what he was supposed to do, that's correct, as he should. And by operation of 3.654B2, he should have notified VA when he was released from active duty and provided his DD-214s. He didn't do it within a year, so he lost the opportunity to have reinstatement to the date of his discharge. When he did finally notify VA, we have reinstated his benefits 1 year prior to that notice.
Anything else?
No, there are no.
We understand your. Thank you very much. You have a rebuttal?
I'll make it short. First of all, I'd like to point out that my client served his country multiple times. He was treated differently than we see in our supplemental authorities. I did not see any distinction in 5304 in this instance. Essentially, the secretary concedes that the first supplemental authority that we submitted, the veteran ended up in a better position than my client. But in fact, what that shows is the arbitrary and capriciousness of the secretary's regulation.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this an issue that fundamentally affects the reserve components? I mean, in this day and age, reservists
are veterans for certain purposes, but they get called regularly, recalled regularly, over and over again to serve on active duty. Are they treated differently than veterans who've served, let's say, 20 years, retired, and are rarely recalled to active duty?
Well, I think that the regulations, forfeiture provisions, have an inordinate and disproportionate impact on veterans who, of our more modern wars, have been recalled multiple times, many of which have been called up from the reserve component. So I think that's correct, Your Honor. But importantly, the Secretary places a lot of emphasis on the length of time that the regulation has been in place. And I would just say that the length of time that a regulation in place has no bearing when the regulation itself is contrary to law. And so we would just ask this court to find that the regulation is contrary to statutory intent. And if the court cannot do that, please consider alternative arguments, in particular our due process argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate the arguments of counsel and the submissions. We will reserve our opinion, and we will come down to greet counsel. Thank you.